Parshas Noach. Welcome back, everybody. Into Parshas Noach and into Chodesh Cheshvan. Sometimes the mistaken feeling, is that following Yom Tov, Chodesh Elul, and Rosh Hashanah, Aseret Yemei Teshuva, Yomim Noiroim, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and we arrive at Cheshvan. Cheshvan is called by Chazal Mar Cheshvan. It is devoid of Yomim Tovim, and therefore the feeling might mistakenly be, so we have a bit of peace now, a bit of quiet. It's been so frantic and frenetic during the course of Elul and Tishri, we need a bit of rest. It's been a rough time. And that's why perhaps Chazal and HaKadosh Baruch Hu organized the calendar such that we have a bit of quiet and peace and quiet until we can prepare till Hanukkah. But of course we know that's absolutely not the case. And Cheshvan, like any other month, has its avodah. And precisely because it's devoid of Yomim Tovim, that confirms the idea that the avodah of Chodesh Cheshvan, rather than jumping onto the next Chag, is to consolidate what we have from the previous Chag. In fact, some point out that the word Cheshvan comes from the words merachashim, to whisper, to talk. In other words, we're still talking, we're still going on and discussing and trying to consolidate everything we've gained, hopefully over the course of the Yom Noiroim. So I'd like to discuss, maybe for a moment or two, what it is exactly that we're supposed to be merachashing, whispering and talking about. And we'll see that actually it's very closely connected to a medrash in our parasha, in Parashas Noach. Perhaps let's begin with a wonderful story, but we need to explain the story. When the Meir Yeshiva escaped to Shanghai during the war years, one year on Yom Kippur, it was absolutely boiling hot, sweltering hot in the yeshiva there. And not only was it boiling hot, the Bochrim, of course, and all on holiday were fasting as well, which made it extra difficult, so much so, it was described that the Bochrim had no choice but to take off their hats and their jackets and their ties. It was just unbearable and impossible and perhaps even dangerous to daven and to fast under this intense heat. Except, however, for the Mashkiach. The Mashkiach, the saintly and famous Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, sat in his place, or more accurately, stood in his place, unmoved the entire Yom Kippur. He was wearing his frack and his talus on the frack, in the heat, unmoved all day, davening and davening and davening, and the Bochrim were just blown away. The Bochrim were just bowled over how it was that he was able to muster up these almost superhuman koiches to be able to daven and fast and stand despite this oppressive heat. How inspiring it was to them. And all during the day, Reb Chatzkel was just standing in the front, davening his tefillahs one after another. It came to the end of the Yom Kippurim, after Ne'ilah, and of course, as you'd expect, after Maariv, the Bochrim were desperate first thing, make their way down to the dining room, break their fast, have something to eat and drink. Reb Chatzkel, meanwhile, was still davening. Following Maariv, he was still in the middle of his Yom Kippur Ne'ilah. And the Bochrim was so moved and so inspired, they felt, we have to give something back to Reb Chatzkel. Look what a Yom Kippur he's given us. Just the fact that he's been standing there. Unlike us, he hasn't taken off any of his heavy clothing. and he's just davening and davening. It's been such an inspiration and such a chizuk for us. We owe so much to him. What can we possibly give back to Reb Chatzkel? How can we repay him in even the smallest way? So it was suggested and then decided what they would do was the following. They would make their way to the dining room, indeed break their fast. But rather than engaging in a whole lengthy meal, they would come back to the Beis HaMedrash, sit down and learn. Such that when Reb Chatzkel would eventually finish his Shmoneh Esrei, because undoubtedly during the Shmoneh Esrei he would be totally oblivious to what's going on around him, but when he would finish and he would turn around and he would see the Beis HaMedrash full, what a tremendous nachas that would be to him. And that's the only way we can even repay Reb Chatzkel in some small way. And indeed, Kein Hoya, they went down to the dining room, they broke their fast, they all made their way back, and there was an intense hasmoda. The yeshiva was packed, hundreds of bachrim learning. Then eventually indeed Reb Chatzkel finished his Shmoneh Esrei and he turns around, and what a wonderful scene in front of his eyes he sees, rather than an empty Beis HaMedrash and everybody tucking in to a well deserved meal after Yom Kippur, rather there were hundreds of bachrim sitting and learning with phenomenal hasmoda. And indeed he was very moved, very appreciative of this incredible gesture on the part of the Meir Bochrim. So he calls the Bochrim, he says, "Here, come close." Obviously Reb Chatzkel at that stage had no kreches left and had to give a whole fire and brimstone shmooze for them. "Come close." They all gathered round, and he said to them, "I must tell you and I must thank you for a phenomenal thing that I've just seen over here after Yom Kippur, and I'm sure you're tired and hungry and thirsty and weak, and then you come and learn it. It's tremendous." And undoubtedly, all of us have had an uplifting and moving Yom HaKippurim this year. Here we are in Shanghai, who would have thought? We all feel elevated after Aseret Yemei Teshuva, but in particular because of Yom Kippur. But of course, the big question becomes, what happens tomorrow? Mocharach Yom HaKippurim. Now everybody's on fire, everybody's davening, you're all learning, it's incredible. But what's going to be tomorrow? We know how things normally end up the day after Yom Kippur. They're not quite the same intensity as Yom Kippur itself, and surely the day after that, and as the weeks and the months go past, we perhaps sometimes lose the tremendous energy that was generated over Yom Kippur. So what's going to be tomorrow? The Yetzer Hara kicks in and he tells you, well, it was all a waste of time. Yom Kippur was very nice, and you fasted, and you might even cried, and you davened, and you banged all your al-chait. Anything you were makabel in yourself has long come and gone, and it's not really therefore even worth investing further efforts, because you can see it's all come to nothing, and Yom Kippur is just but a faded memory. So he told the Bochrim, he said, "I want to tell you a moshel. The moshel is as follows. A wealthy individual decided that he's going to have built for him the most incredible palace, luxurious palace, huge mansion he's going to have built for himself. And he hires the most professional, most skilled and talented workers and painters and decorators, and he tells them, money's no object, whatever you need you can have it. I just want you to build and construct for me the most lavish possible mansion that you could come up with." And indeed they did. And after a few years' work, he comes and inspects. This is going to be his new home, his new palace. An incredible mastership here, work, beautiful mansion. And he decides, no, it's not good enough. There's going to be an opening ceremony as well. A grand opening ceremony. The opening ceremony, as you can imagine, again, money was no object, and he ordered the most talented musicians and caterers and all types of entertainment there, and he invited the crowds, and there's hundreds and thousands there to see his homecoming into his new mansion. The grand finale of this opening ceremony, as he himself designed, and programmed and planned was that he had made a very expensive diamond studded crown, which he was going to take, climb up a ladder at the side of his building, and place this crown on top of his palace, on top of his mansion, literally crown his new home, and that would be the grand finale of this Chanukah Sabayis. Everything was going just to plan. The music, the food, the atmosphere, the weather, everything was just too good to be true. And it comes to the final grand finale indeed, and he climbs up the ladder, lugging this heavy crown, and is about to crown his mansion, when all of a sudden there's a very, very strong gust of wind, blows him off the ladder, and he goes flying, hurtling towards the floor, battered and injured, and he's lying on the floor, crown in hand, and he's yelling and wailing and crying, "My mansion, my mansion, my mansion, my palace, what's happened to my palace?" And they're all looking at him. Strange thing to say. "What's happened to your palace?" "Your palace is here." They thought maybe, I don't know, he'd landed with such a bang, with a bump, maybe he's lost his mind a bit. And then they go close and they think, no, that's what he's actually saying. My palace, my old palace has fallen, my old palace has fallen. And they go over to him and they say, "No, it hasn't. You've fallen, but your palace is still there. Your palace hasn't fallen, you've fallen. You might have to recuperate, you have to recover, but your palace is still there." So Rav Chatzkel told these Bokhrim, it might well be that after Yom HaKippurim, very, very difficult, perhaps even impossible to maintain the same standards of Kirvat Elokim that we all felt in Yom HaKippurim. You may well fall, but don't think that the palace that you put up on Yom Kippur, don't think that the palace has fallen. You may fall, but your palace is still intact. That's what he told them. Let's explain what this means. What did he mean that you may fall, but your palace hasn't fallen? What is it? What's this palace that we are supposed to have built for ourselves during Elul and the Aseret Yemei Teshuva and finally Yom Kippur? What is this palace that we've built, and that Reb Chatzkel was telling his Bokhrim that even if we fall, it's us who have fallen, but not the palace? So this brings us to a pasuk in this week's Sedra. In fact, the opening pasuk in this week's Parsha, Eile told us Noach, Noach ish tzadik tomim hoyo b'deiroi. So the Torah describes Noach in no uncertain terms as an ish tzadik. Wonderful title from the Torah. Says the Medrash, Chaviv Moshe Minoyach. Moshe is more chaviv, he's more precious, more cherished by HaKadosh Baruch Hu than Noach is. Why? Because Noach is initially described in our parasha as an ish tzaddik. Fast forward the end of the parasha, how is he described there? He emerges from the teva, he builds, constructs a vineyard, plants a vineyard, and he's called the Ish Adomo. He's lost his title of being an Ish Tzadik, he's now become an Ish Adomo, a man of the land, of the ground. Contrast that, says the Medrash, to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, shortly after being introduced to us in the Torah in Parashat Shemot, is described by the daughters of Yisroel as being an Ish Mitzri. This man, anonymous, came to save us, and we call him the Ish Mitzri, the Egyptian. Not really a title of much covet. Fast forward to the end of the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu is described as having died as an Ish Ho'elokim, a godly man. So Noach, on the one hand, is initially described as an Ish Tzadik, and he ends up an Ish Adama. Moshe Rabbeinu seems to be going in a different direction. He's initially called the Ish Mitzri, and eventually he's referred to as the Ish Elohim. What does that mean? What's the Medrash teaching us? So I read that in Slobodki Yeshiva, which was headed, of course, by the world famous Alter of Slobodka, Rav Nosson C. Finkel, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the great grandfather of the Meir Rosh Yeshiva, passed away a few years ago, his yahrzeit is coming up. Rav Nosson C. Finkel, the Alter of Slobodka, was known, amongst other things, to be a tremendous mechanech, a master educator. And it was noticed in his yeshiva a very, very strange phenomenon. There was a bocher in the yeshiva who seemed, for all intents and purposes, to be a fantastic bocher. A masmid, a yorei shomayim, a lamdan, a baal midos. And for some strange reason, the altar didn't seem to be makariv him that much. Almost perhaps distanced him, but certainly not makariv him. Meanwhile, there was another bocher who certainly was on a lower level than the first in tefillah, in middos, in learning, in absolutely everything, and the altar was makariv, kirvi yaseira. So somebody plucked up the courage and they said, why is this the case? This bocher seems to be a tremendous bocher. You don't really seem to have much of a relationship with him. You distance yourself from him, at least you're not makariv him. And this other bocher is a very weak bocher, and you're makar of him? So the Alter Slobodka says, you know why? I'll tell you. What is the afternoon called in the Torah? Bein Ho'arbayim. Bein Ho'arbayim from the word Erev, the evening. Why do we refer to the evening, the afternoon as the evening? It's not the evening, it's not the night. The sun is out. It's warm. It's bright. The sun is shining, and why do we refer to it, therefore, as Bein Ho'arbayim, you're in between the evenings? And yet, when the sun rises in the morning, it's hardly light, you can hardly see anything. Oh, it's Yom. I would call the morning the Erev. Closer to the evening in the morning, when you hardly see anything, the afternoon, 12:30, and suddenly you call it Bein Ho'arbayim. Says the Alter, there's one key difference. And what is the difference? In which direction is the sun heading? In the morning, the sun is on its way up. And in the afternoon, it's on its way down. It's true, you're brightly shining, giving everybody light and warmth and heat. But you're on your way down. You're in a downward direction. You're heading towards evening. You're going in an outward direction. Sun rises in the morning, it's true, he's not yet there, but he's in upward direction. That's absolute yoyim, l'chol dovo. Said the Alter, this first bocher, it's true, he's a fantastic davener, Yerushamayim. The problem with this bocher, said the Alter, with his detective eye, he said, this bocher I know is not a ben aliyah. He's not looking to grow. As far as he's concerned, he is Mr. Complete. He's a made man. He's not moving in an upward direction. This other bocher, meanwhile, he may be weaker. He is weaker in all areas, but he's a proper mabakish. He's an oiler. He's moving in an upward direction. He's the one I want to be makaris. So they said in Slobodka, that's what the Medrash means in our parasha. It might well be that Noach was initially called the Ish Tzadik, but after that it was downhill all the way. He then becomes the Ish Adamah. Moshe Rabbeinu may be considered the Ish Mitzri, but it was going in an upward direction from there on in, such that he eventually became the Ish Elohim. That's why the Medrash said, Chaviv Moshe Minoyach. It doesn't so much matter where you're up to, it matters where you're heading to. In which direction are you going? Imagine you had a sum of money to invest. You have two options. Big company, successful company, or the small starter-up company. So we would all say, obviously, invest your money in this big company's proven track record. But if you're then told that actually this big company seems to have a tremendous change of fortune recently and everything is going disastrously wrong for them. They might have billions in their reserves, but it's all going downhill. Meanwhile, this smaller company, everything they touch turns to gold. That's where you want to invest your money. They have much less income than the big company. It's true. But they're going in an upward direction. The big company is going downhill. You don't want to touch them. Like the altar. Didn't want to be makar of the bocha who's not a ben aliyah. Chaviv Moshe mi Noach means Moshe was going on an upward direction rather than like Noach in a downward direction. I once read, and this is a big chizuk to me personally, a Talmud of the Mashkiach that we mentioned before, Chatzkel Levenstein, was appointed as a Rosh Hashiva. And he came to his Rebbe, his great Rebbe, Reb Chatzkel, and he says, I have a problem. In my capacity as Rosh Hashiva, I'm expected every so often to deliver a drasha and a shmuz and a fire and brimstone, sichas musa. And I must be perfectly honest, I sometimes feel that why? Or am I entitled to lecture and preach about davening, for example? Who says, quite frankly, that I'm the world's best davener myself? Here I am telling the Bokhar, you have to miss chazak in davening and come on time for davening and then have kavanah in davening and pirishah. One second, I'm the world's best davener myself? I always come on time? I always have kavanah? I'm going to give them a shmooze. They have to learn about smother and they have to learn about amelus. One second, I'm such a big masmid myself. If I'm being perfectly honest, quite frankly, I'm not quite sure that I'm holding there myself. So who am I to lecture and to preach unto others? So Reb Chatzkel says, there's one question I need to ask you, and that's the answer to your question. When you give, for example, a shmooze on the union of tefillah, and you've been honest enough to admit that you're perhaps not really holding there yourself, tell me, do you have a she'ifa to get there? Do you have an aspiration to get there? If you do, then you have every right to lecture others about it as well. Let's define that. She'ifa doesn't mean, I'd love to be a good davener one day. That's not a she'ifa, that's a fantasy. That's a dream. A she'ifa means I have a program. I've designed for myself a directive how I'm going to get there. I might not be there yet, but I'm working in an upward direction. I'm not there yet, but I'm heading there. Not just a fantasy. I'd love to be a good davener. I'd love to be a masman. I'd love to be this. I'd love to be a thousand things. That's not a goal. That's a dream. That's a fantasy. Reb Chatzkel was telling his Talmud, if you have a program, you have a tochnit, how are you going to get there? You're moving in that direction, you might not be there yet, but you have every right to give a shmooze on the subject. And I once found Dvorim Mufurashim in the Matei Ephraim, when he talks about Hilchas Yom Kippur, and he says the minhag is, as we know, the Rav gives a Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, and essentially the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha should really be based on Divrei Musa. So he quotes there in the name of the Agra Zakali, the Bnei Yisrael, and he says that when somebody gives a drasha, he's got to make sure that he himself is sholim. He himself is perfect in that Indian, otherwise why is he lecturing others about it? And if he's not perfect in it, kibalnu mirabaisein, we have a Kabbalah from our Rebbes, sheyaharher b'tshuva, v'yekabel al atzmoi la'aseisa. I should be makabel on myself to become a sholem in this thing. Oh, now you can give a drush about it. This is exactly what Reb Chatzkel was saying. I'm not yet there. It doesn't say that it's enough to hope you're going to be there and wish you're going to be there. V'yekabel al atzmoi la'aseisa. a firm resolution that I'm moving in an upward direction. I haven't arrived yet, but I'm on my way up. There was a famous celloist. They say he was the world's most famous celloist. Pablo Casals. And to the age of 90, he was practicing 6 hours a day. So he was once asked, they say about you that you're the world's greatest celloist. Why is it necessary? You're a man of your 90s. You're practicing 6 hours a day still? He said, I feel I'm still improving. I'm moving in an upward direction. There's still work to do. The Abdul Elif Abdullah is, we're trying to become better mispalalim, better loim de Torah, better balei midos, and we know ourselves that we're not yet there. The question that we need to ask ourselves is, but are we moving in that direction? Because if we are, then we're a ben aliyah. Then we have this chavivus that perhaps Noach didn't deserve, for Moshe Rabbeinu did, because he was going in an upward direction. We hear this expression a lot, the expression Ben Aliyah. A person wants to be a Ben Aliyah. Have we ever thought to ourselves, what does it mean a Ben Aliyah? Why don't we just call him an Oyler? What's an Oyler? Somebody who's going upwards. What's a Ben? I'm the son of an Aliyah? What does that mean, a Ben Aliyah? Why is a Ben called a Ben? A son. Why is he called Ben? Which word, what is Ben the Sheirish of? Which other word in Lashon HaKodesh has the Sheirish Ben? Boine, to build. Why is a Ben and Boine, what is the relationship between those two words? We know on Shabbos there is a Melocha, Melechet Boine, not allowed to build on Shabbos. What is the definition of building? So we all have our definitions. Construction, building. The Rambam says for us, you know what Boina is, those who are with us when we learn Hilchos Shabbos together. The Rambam says, if you are Mekabet Chelek El Chelek, it is the joining together of different parts. That's Boina. Such that they become guf echad. The Rambam says if you make cheese on Shabbos, that's an issa deiraisa. Which issa? Boina. Boina? Where are the bricks? Where's the cement? Where's the house? Where's the windows? Boina has nothing to do with house or windows or cement. It's the construction, meaning the merging of different items that now become one. That's the act of cheese making. A son is the ultimate connection between two people. So much so that the son is, as it were, part and parcel of his father. Chazal say, Bno kara d'avuha. He is the leg of his father. I can have a relationship with a friend of mine. One day I have a fight with him, and tomorrow we have no relationship. That's it, we're no longer friends. If a son has a tremendous fallout with his father, he never speaks to him for 50 years, still a son. He might not be a friend, still a son. You can't take that away from him. That's the reality. That's the ultimate connection. That's why Ben and Boina is the same root. Because here you have two different people, a father and a son, but really there's a binyan, there's a connection. The father and the son are already one entity. When a person gets married, essentially, they're two separate people. But the Torah says, no, v'dovak be'ishtoi, they become one. So we have a principle, ishtoi kegufoi. Ishtoi kegufoi, it's one entity. One entity. When I light my Hanukkah candles, my wife is also mechuyev to light. Furusha Gemara, so why doesn't she light? My children light, so why doesn't my wife light? Says the Mishnah Berurah, Ishtei Kegufei. She did like. She didn't. She was standing next to me. Yeah, she is you. It's one goof. That's a binyan. That's a binyan. That's a ben. When we talk about, therefore, the concept of being a ben aliyah, do you know what it means to be a ben aliyah? Like we said, ben means connection, not construction, connection. A ben aliyah is not somebody who occasionally dabbles in trying to improve himself. A ben aliyah means like a son to a father. It's a constant. You cannot sometimes be the son of somebody. Who's your father? Sometimes this person, sometimes somebody else. It doesn't make sense. You only have one father and you serve your father. A friend can be temporary. It's here today, it's gone tomorrow, but not a ben. A ben aliyah is somebody who is oyla the whole time. That's what a ben aliyah means. We don't call him an oyla, we call him a ben aliyah. He is constantly engaged in trying to improve himself. Or a ben Torah, a ben aliyah. There's a scary question, which, don't worry, I'm not going to ask anybody here. But essentially, to the true ben aliyah, this shouldn't be a scary question at all. The true ben aliyah is never ever afraid of being asked, tell me, what is it? Which area of Avodas Hashem are you constantly, at the moment, working on? The non-ben aliyah is very frightened of that question. Why is he frightened? Because the answer might be, what am I working on at the moment? Give me a call next Elul. I'm taking a break. It's Cheshvan now. But the ben aliyah says, no, I'm a ben aliyah. I'm not an oyla. I'm a ben aliyah. I'm constantly engaged in moving in an upward direction. So what am I working on now? I'm definitely working on something. I'm not afraid to be asked. It's definitely something. Torah, Tefillah, Midos, whatever it may be. That's a ben aliyah. The contrast, therefore, that the Medrash is making between Moshe Rabbeinu and Noach, if we may coin this phrase, Moshe Rabbeinu was the ultimate ben aliyah. He moved from being a Ish Mitzri to an Ish Elokim, in an upward direction. But Noach went in the opposite direction. He was like the afternoon sun. Might be an Ish Tzadik, but he's heading only downwards. Became an Ish Adam. Let's come back now to the story we began with. Reb Chatzkel tells the Talmidim, wonderful, you're sitting and learning and Motziyim Kippur, everyone's just flying sky high, you feel like Malachim. But what's going to be tomorrow? So he told them, you may fall. You may well fall, but the palace you built didn't fall. What is that palace? The palace that we built in Yom Kippur is that firm resolution in whichever area of Avodas Hashem it may be that I'm now undertaking a project from now till next year to be a constant ben aliyah in this particular area of chizuk that I need to be mischazik in. That's the palace that we built, such that if we occasionally slip, we might have fallen, but we're still climbing. Imagine you have a mountaineer and he decides, I'm going to scale the most difficult summit of Mount Everest. And he gets all his equipment and all his team and all the everything he needs. On his way up, he might slip here and there. And if you manage to photograph him falling down, what would you say? He's on his way down now? No! He's climbing the mountain. He fell over. But his palace is still there. What was his palace? His dream, his program, his tochnit to scale the summit is still very much there. You haven't given that up. Unless, one day, he just falls so many times and he says, that's it, I'm giving up. Then you're no longer a ben aliyah. You've given up. Now you're going in a downward direction. That's what Reb Chatzkel, I think, was being mechazik his Talmidim with. Every one of us, hopefully, during the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, and particularly in Yom Kippur, we will mekabel on ourselves to improve in this area and that area. Realistic Kabbalah. The reality is we're not always able to maintain them. But that doesn't mean that our palace has fallen. It means we have fallen. We have slipped up. But we're still a Ben Aliyah. That's the palace that we built. The palace that we built in Yom Kippurim, Be'ezah Hashem, with Siyata Dishmaya, is this firm resolution to be on a constant program of improvement. I might fall. I probably will fall. And probably more than once. So here's where the Yetzer Hara kicks in. The Yetzer Hara tells you, give up. It's not going to happen. You've fallen once and you've fallen twice, and all these rich Kabbalahs you made, it was all wonderful in Yom Kippur. But how did things look 3 weeks later when you come to Chodesh Cheshvan? There's no Moyadim, there's no Chagim, there's nothing to do with Chayra in Cheshvan. You have no driving force to be Mischazik, and that's why you've slipped and you've fallen. Give up. The avoida of the Cheshvan is, like we just said, Cheshvan Merach Hashem. I'm not giving up. I'm still talking about it. I'm still being Mischazik. I may have fallen. My palate hasn't fallen. I want to be the Ben Aliyah. I want to be this constant oiler, non-stop. I might fall. Every oiler falls here and there. But he's still climbing. The mountaineer who slips is still climbing. Even if you have a photograph of him hurtling 100 feet down the mountain, he's still climbing. Because his aspiration, his program to get to the top, is very much still alive and well. He's fallen along the way. That's what Reb Chatzko was telling the Bochrim after this sensational Yom Kippur that they were zeicher to. Don't be a noyach, be a Moshe Rabbeinu. Be an oiler. A constant oiler. And if I may just add in conclusion, I once read in the book called The Eye of a Storm by Rabbi Aaron Feldman, and he has a chapter there, if I may say, a very brave chapter, like every chapter in that book, and it's about biographies of Gedolei Yisrael. And he said that several biographies, maybe all biographies, are written in a way which sometimes they don't inspire. On occasion, to the contrary, they put people off. They're so big. At 7, you knew all of Torah. At 8, you knew all of Shas Mishnayos. At 10, you knew all of Shas Bavli. Okay, what's that going to do with me? So either the book becomes irrelevant, so it's not serving its purpose, or worse still, it can be meyayish somebody. Look how big these people are. Well, what am I? I'm a nothing. I'm a garnish. Finished. There was a hesped, I remember, after Remechel Yehuda Lefkovich was nifta, somebody gave a hesped. Oh, Remechel Yehuda was unbelievable. From 11 years old, he undertook he's never eating ice cream ever again, and he indeed never ate ice cream ever again. Somebody told me, not perhaps the wisest thing, around his Friday night table, he has some kids around the table, he has an 8-year-old son, he told him, you know, unbelievable, Remechel Yehuda, 11 years old, he never ate ice cream ever again. So the boy said, alright, fine, so I still have 3 years of ice cream to go. That's not an inspiration. And worse still, it may just bring about a despondency. Yeah, they're too big. So Rabbi Aaron Feldman Shlita writes in his Sefer, what we're not told in these books is the struggles and the falls. Because undoubtedly these people, all these Gedolei Yisrael, became big not despite having fallen, but precisely because of having fallen. Sheva, Yipoil, Tzadik, Vakom. Everybody falls, but how do you deal with the next day? Now, I'm not getting involved now why the biographies don't write the struggles and don't describe them. That's not our subject today. It might be the right thing. But the fact of the matter is that if you don't describe that, then sometimes these books can't serve an inspiration for you. But if we would read, you know, this Gadol Yisrael, actually, no, he wasn't the dream prize Talmud at the age of 8, and he struggled, and no, he didn't have a good memory, and in fact, he didn't have good minutes, but he worked on himself. He became an oiler, a Ben Aliyah, and look what he became.
then that's very relevant to me. And that's not just relevant, it's mechayev me. That's mechayev me.
This is what we're learning today. The avoda of cheshvan is merachashim. Keep talking about the Yom HaNaraim. Don't let it just slip into oblivion and become a distant memory. Yeah, how was Yom Kippur? It was fine, it was nice, it's all gone. The Yetzer Hara has long won the battle and he's convinced me that all my Kabbalahs are history and... No, chas v'shalom. We may fall, but our palace is very much alive and well. Be'ez Hashem, we should be zeicher throughout the course of this long winter, Mitzvah Hashem. We have a 6 month, big man, half a year's man ahead of us in this leap year of Tavshinayin Tes, which is undoubtedly Be'ez Hashem, an opportunity for all of us to be Oila. The art, the trick is not to let the Yetzer Hara think that our palace has fallen. Rather, we may have fallen, but in Mitzvah Hashem, our palace is intact. We should be zeicher all of us to a Zman of Aliyah. Thank you.